here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taken to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
What's left of us? Just a big mistake.
Good evening, and thanks for joining us on this Monday evening. Today on the show, we bring you special coverage of International Women's Day with a discussion about women's and gender issues with guests in studio from the UBC Women's and Gender Studies Program, the UBC Women's Center, the Sexual Assault Support Center, the Sexual Assault Awareness Month Steering Committee, UBC V-Day, and Students for Reproductive Rights. We also will bring you an interview with filmmaker Adam Shapiro, who directed a film about Palestinian refugees. First on the show, we have our friends from the UBCian studio to discuss the stories from the recent edition of UBC's student newspaper. Thanks for being with us in studio.
Thank you very much. In this week's headlines, the UBC has learned that the culprit who cast over 700 illegal votes in this year's AMS elections did not do so at an AMS polling station or a computer in the sub. Elections Administrator Isabel Ferreras revealed on Wednesday's AMS Council meeting that 731 votes in total were cast from a single IP address from between 12:44 p.m. and 4 p.m. on January 29th, the final day of voting. She referred to these irregularities as suspect voting. She also noted that 18 of these suspect voters had ineligible student numbers. For the most part, however, the votes of these suspect voters were random. The final report is supposed to be presented to the Elections Committee this week, and an emergency AMS Council meeting is tentatively scheduled for Monday, March 15th.
The voting irregularities referred to by the Elections Committee in a letter to media last week could result in changes to the Senate and voter-funded media races. Latham noticed that a significant amount of votes around the end of voting period came from the same IP address. We are very actively trying to determine who the person or group that voted multiple times is, and we are making progress, said UBC Associate Vice President and Registrar James Raich.
Commerce students will soon vote on whether they want to pay an annual $500 building fee that will pay for structural upgrades to the Henry Angus Building. Undergraduate students at the Sauder School of Business will go to the polls on March 11th and 12th to vote on the fee, which would commence in September 2012 and is set to conclude in about 35 years. The fee would pay for approximately $20 million that is needed to pay for the second phase of upgrades to the Henry Angus Building. Phase one of the building upgrades was completed earlier this year. At a town hall meeting on Tuesday, Sauder Dean Daniel Mazuka informed Commerce students that when Sauder made the initial plans for the building, it was to be jointly funded by students, in addition to the university and donors. Quote, donors gave money on the premise that the university and students were going to be contributing somehow, end quote, explained Mazuka. The Commerce Undergraduate Society Board of Directors voted in favor of holding the referendum at their Monday meeting. They also took an official stance supporting the fee. Quote, our control, as students are saying, we demand a world-class business school, we demand a world-class degree, and we're willing to pay for it, end quote, said incoming Commerce Undergraduate Society President Connor McGalley.
The asphalt and concrete that covered the Lord and Buck fields during the 2010 Olympics will soon be removed and replaced with grass. The fields, located just south of the Douglas Mitchell Thunderbird Sports Center, were paved in an agreement with VanOck to accommodate a media compound during the games. In addition to being returned to their original state, the fields will also receive upgrades to their irrigation drainage systems. This was due to a follow-up agreement that allows UBC to take control over the restoration project. According to Cavi Tour, Associate Director of Facilities and Business Development for UBC Athletics and Recreation, these irrigation upgrades will allow for 6 additional hours of recreational use per week. The fields, which are used primarily for rugby practices, will remain closed until at least September to allow for the grass seed to grow and settle.
Tour emphasized the benefit of this temporary closure. Even though we had missed some opportunities with this field at a time when there was gravel and asphalt, we are coming out of it with better surface and better playing venue than we had before, he said. We're able to get more playing time out of it, and in the long run, it was a benefit. And thank you very much. This is Paul Bucci for Justin McElroy and the UBC Headline News.
And thanks for that coverage. Last week was Israeli Apartheid Week here on campus. Our own News 101 reporter Sasha Honey caught up with Adam Shapiro, director of Chronicles of a Refugee, to discuss the film which was screened here on campus.
Okay, so I'm here with Adam Shapiro, and we just got a screening of episode 5 of his Chronicles of a Refugee. So, Adam, how did you get involved with Palestinian rights, and why did you decide to do a documentary series?
So I first got involved with the Palestinian issue, I would say, probably when I was a graduate student in college, when I first was studying the Middle East and the Arab world and learning about the situation between Israel and Palestine.
Right.
But then I didn't actually get more, I mean, I was just kind of learning about the situation, but then I started living in Palestine in 1999. And when the Intifada began in 2000, and I was seeing what was happening to Palestinians, that the people who were protesting, people who were trying to stand up for their rights were being shot at, who, you know, lethal force used against them. I really felt I had to do something. And so I started joining in the protests and trying to make noise as an American citizen to pressure my government and to get other people involved.
Right.
And then in terms of a documentary, I've always used video as an activist, and I see my filmmaking actually as an extension of activism. But with this film, I really felt, because I'm able to travel and to go to all the places where Palestinians live, to refugee camps, to different countries. I mean, a lot of people don't actually have the ability to get visas and to do this, especially if you are Palestinian. So I really felt this was something I could do to try to chronicle, to document, especially 60 years after, more than 60 years after the 1948 Nakba and the destruction of Palestinian society, that it was important to capture before people started, you know, passing away, or, I mean, already people have passed away, but
yes,
that generation passes on completely, to capture and record their voices and their histories and bring it forward.
So can you tell me a little bit about your interviews? I believe you had 250 interviews in 18 countries. How did you choose your interviews? Who did you interview and why?
For the most part, we tried to interview people who weren't leaders or you know, spokespeople or involved with organizations. Just tried, you know, as much as possible, normal, average people. Right. Often people who haven't ever told their stories before. So we really did it by word of mouth, making links with people, friends that we had, and then asking about their families, and then going, you know, in these kind of private social networks to find people. And then we'd show up in a city, and we knew one person in the city, like in Berlin, for instance. We knew one person in Berlin, and we sat with him and said, okay, these are the kinds of people we're looking for, these are the kinds of stories. And, you know, Palestinian communities are often very small and tight-knit, so they were able to point us, individuals were often able to take us around to people to meet. And one thing that we really wanted to do was have, you know, a wide range of perspectives. So
right.
People who had lived in many, you know, different countries, who were rich, who were poor, who were educated, who weren't educated, obviously men and women, different generations. So we really want to have as much of a representative sample of the Palestinian community as it is.
Okay. So this particular episode, which was Talk of Return, can you tell me a little bit about why you think Palestinians have that right to return?
Well, the right of return is, of course, enshrined in international law. It's enshrined in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which, incidentally, was being written, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, in 1948 and 49, exactly at the time that the events were unfolding in Palestine, when Palestinians were being made refugees. And there's a number of people who were on that committee creating the Declaration of Human Rights that said that watching this experience, watching what was happening in Palestine, informed directly the kinds of things that they put in the Declaration of Human Rights, including the right of return. They were aware that there were all these hundreds of thousands of refugees being forced out of their homes, and that's why it is a fundamental human right. Plus, also, there's precedent. There's other countries, other places, other refugee populations around the world that have enjoyed the right of return and who have returned to their homes, and Palestinians should be no different than anybody else.
So, in your opinion, do you think that Israel will ever agree to accept the Palestinian right to return?
I don't know that Israel will ever agree to it without pressure.
Right.
And what kind of pressure that's going to have to be, I think, is going to have to take a variety of forms. I don't think we can count on any government or any state to pressure Israel on this issue. I think ultimately the refugees themselves and Palestinian organizations are going to have to come up with strategies by which they can create their own reality on the ground and make Israel agree. I was just watching a documentary today about Nelson Mandela and the South African freedom movement, and
right.
The South African government didn't come, the apartheid government didn't come to change its mind just because it woke up one morning and said, oh, we should end apartheid. No, it was because of sustained pressure brought on the government that forced them to recalculate their interests, and I think the same is going to be true on Israel.
Yes. So my last point is, what can we do as UBC students and us as a body to help enforce these Palestinian rights?
Well, I think it's first, of course, is education. First is learning about the situation and becoming aware of what is the situation. UBC students sit in classrooms with Palestinians, some of whom are refugees, who are stateless people, who in some cases maybe don't even have a passport in their name because they're not part of any state. Mm-hmm. It's important to know that these are students who are sitting among you and their kind of experiences and learn from them. And then secondly, beyond that, for those who want to take more action, I think one of the great campaigns going on right now around the world is boycott, divestment, and sanctions. And this is something that I know that students around the world are engaged in on a number of issues and starting to be engaged in on terms of boycotting and divesting from Israel, companies that do business with Israel, as a way of pressuring it to conform with international law. And I think that that's a great initiative that students can do.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thanks.
And thank you to Sasha for that coverage. We're going to take a quick break, but stay with us. Up after the PSA break, we have a discussion with a number of guests here live in studio on International Women's Day.
Last night, I left the bar. I was thirsty, and I don't drink wine. I was desperate. I needed blood. I turned to the only place I could. The only place that could possibly help me.
Hello, Canadian Blood Services.
Hello. I need some blood. A. Positive or negative, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, we're all out of A positive and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't do. Thank you. Good night. Save me. Save yourself. Give blood. Voluntarily.
This message was brought to you courtesy of the Canadian Blood Services and CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
Known pimp, narcotics king, big time racketeer, back in full force.
This could be one of the big moments in your life. Don't make it your last.
Look, this thing might be bigger than even we think it is.
Do you need an upgrade to the soundtrack to your life? Perhaps a song from a film or a tune from TV? My name is Gap. Exploding Head Movies is here to give you sounds from the cinema, along with the songs that will be defining your future, and those forgotten classics that need a little rescue.
Come on, baby. Come on. I won't let you down. Follow me.
It's Floating Head Movies, Monday, 7:30 to 9 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
And thanks for being with us. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM here in Vancouver. And it's International Women's Day, March 8th, and I'm joined in studio with a number of guests from resource groups, clubs, and different programs on campus to discuss gender issues, women's and gender issues, here on International Women's Day. First, I want to begin by allowing our in-studio guests to introduce themselves. So we'll go around and they'll introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about what they're involved with here on campus.
Hello, I'm Brad Morrison. I'm with the external office of the AMS. I'm the Child Care Commissioner. I want to plug a conference that we're holding on May 21st and 22nd. It's on the issue of child care on campus of institutions of higher learning. And we invite submissions from academics as well as child care advocates and students. So please submit something at childcare@ams.ubc.ca. And we also invite students to come and just participate in various ways. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jessica Plumpton. I'm with the Students for Reproductive Rights, a pro-choice group on UBC. And I'll be talking about the Genocide Awareness Project coming to the sub tomorrow and the protest we've arranged for it.
Hi, I'm Janice Tay. I'm a third-year international student. I am involved in a number of groups like Speakeasy, the Sexual Assault Support Center, and I was involved also in the Sexual Assault Awareness Month by the Arts Faculty last month.
My name's Elena. I'm the co-president of the UBC Women's and Gender Studies Undergrad Association, and I'm also on the steering committee for the Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and I'm closely involved with the AMS Women's Center as well.
I'm Lau Mahesh. I'm one of the co-coordinators of UBC V-Day and the Vagina Monologues on UBC campus this year. I'm also part of the Women's Studies Undergraduate Society, and I was a member of the steering committee for the Sexual Assault Awareness Month.
Great. Well, and thanks to all of you for being with us today. What I want to begin by discussing the activities that are happening on campus today, specifically at the in the Women's and Gender Studies program. If Elena or Lau, you'd like to speak on that?
Sure. The Center for Women's and Gender Studies has a lecture that they're holding right now, actually, from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock, so unfortunately we're not there. But it's going to be about gender, sport, and nation. They have two professors that are going to be talking about those kinds of issues and perhaps relating it to the women ski jumpers as well. And that's the Center for Women's and Gender Studies.
And can you give us a little sense of what the Women's and Gender Studies program is about on campus, and what courses are offered, and as an undergraduate society, what the society does?
So the Women's Studies program is a really fantastic program. It's a program that deals with politics, history, philosophy, theory, all cultural studies, all from a feminist, anti-racist, anti-oppressive perspective. It's a fantastic program. It has some of the best feminist scholars in the country as the professors in the program. It has a whole range of courses from women in literature courses to gender relation courses to women in the media, women and family, women in nation building, women's history. So it really ranges the whole spectrum, and they're all totally fantastic courses. The Women's Studies Undergraduate Society is a group of students who are women's studies majors or minors, or who are even just taking women's studies classes. We're totally open, and we invite everyone to come to our open meetings. And we do a bunch of different events for the faculty, kind of building relations within the faculty, getting students to know one another, getting students to know their professors. We do a group called Chatting Over Chocolates in the fall. We've organized a whole bunch of other things. We're doing a charity awareness project. So a whole bunch of different stuff, and we have a lot of fun. And there's always good food in our meetings. So.
That's true. We have a lot of hummus.
Yeah. A lot of hummus.
Good times.
Feminists love hummus.
And I want to ask you all why International Women's Day is important. Maybe personally, why it's important for you, and in a larger context, why it's important that we have activities and events happening on campus and on a larger scale within our city and around the world. If anyone wants to jump in at any point, please do.
Okay, I'll talk again. So I think that one of the major reasons why International Women's Day is still important is because women are not equal. I think that International Women's Day helps to highlight feminism and highlight the reasons why feminism is still important globally, but also locally and like right here on campus in Vancouver in Canada. It's incredibly important. Women are still paid 75% of what men make for the same jobs. Women are still most likely to be burdened with poverty and with childcare. These kind of things are very pressing needs. Women are still have to survive sexual violence, and it's like absolutely horrible. And the fact that these things still happen and that they happen to women is why International Women's Day is important, to raise awareness around these issues. I mean, I think that every day should be Women's Day, but I think that having a day that kind of highlights it is important, raises awareness, and hopefully gets people thinking.
And can you talk about what UBC V-Day is and the Vagina Monologues?
Absolutely. UBC V-Day is a group that works to end violence against women and girls. We're linked to a larger organization called V-Day International. But UBC V-Day works independently from them to raise awareness about sexualized violence and also to raise money for existing anti-violence groups doing anti-violence work, both on campus and in Vancouver. We did two shows just before the reading break, and the Vagina Monologues and another play called A Memory, A Monologue, A Rant, and A Prayer. And they both went fantastically well, and we supported four different beneficiaries, the SASC, the Sexual Assault Support Center on campus, being one of them. That's kind of what we do.
And Janice, do you think you could talk a little bit about what the Sexual Assault Support Center, what resources it offers students, and what the main goal of the center is?
The Sexual Assault Support Center adopts a feminist approach, and it's a support center that supports all forms of violence. Like, it's mainly and majority, and the majority of the violence it supports is regarding sexual assault. But it's also an all-inclusive service that anyone of any gender who experienced any violence can go and seek support from that service. Yeah, like the feminist perspective is just one of the many approaches that is taken. Yeah.
And now is it student? It's student driven. Sorry.
It's not a student driven service. It's an AMS service. We have like two professional workers who are working full time there, but they have a student volunteer program, and we have a lot of students this year volunteering and just putting time and effort into getting to know what the SASC is about and actually like volunteering their time to like do activities like the December 6th Memorial Day. And on March 19th, which is next Friday, we have the Clothesline Project, which is an anti-violence project too, and it's going to be in the SAP.
Great. So, yeah. And I want to talk about gender inequality here on the UBC campus, and this is again open to anyone who wants to talk. Where do we see gender inequality on campus, and how do we address it?
That's a really big question, and it's like a really important question that we need to constantly ask. And also, we need to start situating that specific question about gender inequality around looking at an anti-oppressive framework. Like, there's intersecting inequalities that we really need to address, not only just gender, but also how race and how sexuality and how ability, age, all these different oppressions can work in different ways and support each other. And so that's what we need to be looking at, is how do we approach gender inequality, but not just that, like, how do we approach all these oppressions, and how do we see them, that feminism can work with this and can take its emancipatory potential to address all these kinds of inequalities. On our campus, I think that some things that are relevant to students would be the resource groups. They're actually a great way for students to connect with other people who, I don't know how, sorry, someone just took a pen out of my hand. The resource groups are a really great place to get more information, to connect with other people. There's Allies UBC, there's Pride UBC, the Student Environmental Center, Student Social Justice Center, and Color Connected. And they all work together, and we work with the Women's Center as well. So I would encourage people to look on there. But just on our campus as well, the Sexual Assault Awareness Month was meant to bring attention to the fact that sexual assault is a reality in a lot of people's lives. And though some people might say that awareness is actually not that big of an issue, people already know. Actually, some people don't know. And we need to have that conversation over and over again, and we need to move forward with something together. So I think that people should look into the resource groups, look into the Center for Women's and Gender Studies, and we can work together. And also the AMS Equity Program, which does excellent, excellent work. I would encourage everyone to get involved as much as you can, and you're all welcome to.
Do you think some students are hesitant to seek support and take advantage of these great resources on campus because there is a feeling of maybe a fear of maybe seeking that support, and that could be rooted in a number of different causes, but mm-hmm. is there sometimes
a hesitation?
Yeah, that hesitation.
I'm sure everyone has their hesitations, and like my place is is to respect the autonomy of each person. That when they decide that they feel comfortable enough to come and work with the people, or decide on their own to seek other services, then that is completely their choice. It's definitely not my place to say why someone is being hesitant or not. I mean, it really would be quite arrogant of me to say that. But I would hope that we continue to work on making our centers as welcoming as possible. And that includes respecting some of the ideas of feminism, which is to be self-reflexive in terms of always understanding your oppression as interconnected with other oppressions as well. So, Janice, did you want to say anything about SASC? No, okay.
Well, and I want to ask you...
No, go ahead and ask.
On a university campus, obviously, there are a number of different inequalities. Do you think in classrooms as well, we're seeing, obviously, gender inequality play out in terms of the relationship between faculty and students? Do we see... Mm-hmm. I don't want to put you on the spot, but is that another dimension to this as well?
Well, I guess you can speak on the level of, say, deans. But just because, I mean, there's a tendency sometimes to equate gender with femininity or with the female body. And just because someone perhaps self-identifies as a woman does not necessarily mean that they will espouse feminist ideals. And that's the real issue, right? Is that you want to have gender equality, but you also want to look at feminism as having its own political agenda to talk about gender equality, not just on the level of representation, but also on the level of material realities, right? Does anyone else want to?
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, on that note, I would like to say that it's not... You know, we have so much discussions about inequalities, oppressions, how different resource groups exist just because all this oppression exists. But the flip side we fail to always look at is that how far we have come. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if we haven't done anything, if the first students haven't said anything, haven't done anything, haven't stood up and fight for their rights or recognize these oppressions, this, you know, resource groups or clubs or, you know, student initiatives like that wouldn't even exist. Mm-hmm. So the fact here that we are talking about it and talking that it is still inadequate means something, but also we still have to recognize that we can't take all this for granted and we have come a really long way.
Obviously, feminism is very relevant today, but a number of often some, you know, students today talk as if it's not, and that we have reached a point where it's feminism is no longer relevant because that equality has been reached. Do you think, especially when we're talking, when we're looking at a university campus or talking with students, there's this myth or this belief that it's not relevant, that's becoming relevant. Do you find yourself faced with that? This is an open question to anyone.
Absolutely. I would say that that's definitely the case. There's a lot of there's a lot of the angry feminist label or the why are they still talking about this label? But I mean, like I said, it's a reality in a lot of people's lives. Oppression, marginalization, violence is a reality in a lot of students' lives. And I think even you were saying, just in classrooms, I mean, people still say offensive things in classrooms. They still say racist, oppressive, classist, sexist, whatever, ableist things that are those ideas are constantly still being put out there. And so for me, as long as that those kind of discussions are still or those kind of things are still being said and those kind of ideas are still being held, feminism is absolutely relevant. But yeah, there's definitely a backlash for sure.
Well, great. We're going to continue this discussion after a PSA break and our weather report. So stay with us. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. This is News 101.
The AIDS Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the helpline is one of many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The helpline number is 604-696-4666 or contact us online at www.aidsvancouver.org.
The 10th Anniversary Vancouver International Dance Festival is taking place March 12th to March 21st at the Vancouver Playhouse and Roundhouse venues. The 2010 lineup includes Vancouver Company's Mascal Dance, Kokoro Dance, Flamenco Rosario, and Out Inner Space. Ontario's Toronto Dance Theatre, Taiwan's Lafa and Artists, Denmark's Kit Johnson, New Zealand's Black Grace and Bill Crutchmaster Shannon, Michael Sakamoto, and Evidence from the United States. The 10th Anniversary Vancouver International Dance Festival, March 12th to March 21st at the Vancouver Playhouse and Roundhouse venues. Tickets are available at 604-662-4966 or online at vidf.ca.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, daily grassroots, global, unembedded, international, independent news hour. And this is CITR 101.9 FM.
And thanks for being with us. This is News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at UBC. And we're continuing our discussion on International Women's Day. And now we're going to talk to Jessica, who's with Students for Reproductive Rights here on campus. Jessica, can you tell us a little bit about the group and the current projects the group is working on?
Sure. So Students for Reproductive Rights is a pro-choice group on UBC. Our goal is to educate and raise awareness of reproductive rights issues. We do like to stress we're not a pro-abortion group. We don't promote abortion over other options, but we do defend it as a central aspect of sexual and reproductive rights. The Genocide Awareness Project is coming to UBC tomorrow. And this is a controversial display that travels to campuses across Canada and the United States. It's an anti-choice display featuring graphic posters, and it's run by the Center for Bioethical Reform. GAP argues that abortion is the same as highly organized and hate-motivated crimes such as the Holocaust, the Rwandan genocide, and racist lynchings in the United States. And as I said, it will be at UBC tomorrow by the Knoll from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
So Students for Reproductive Rights has organized a peaceful protest against the display. We feel that exploiting images of victims of these terrible crimes is racist and anti-Semitic. It simplifies complex histories, and it's been known to be traumatizing for students with links to the genocides portrayed, and of course traumatizing for those who have had abortions. GAP also reflects sexist views that women's bodies and reproductive choices should be controlled. The women are depicted as weak and unable to make difficult decisions, and the argument is often made that women need to be protected from abortion and that they're incapable of making informed choices. So Students for Reproductive Rights will be meeting tomorrow at 9:30 a.m. in room 245 of the sub, and we'll be protesting outside the sub at the Knoll from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And if anyone is interested in joining our groups, we meet on Mondays at 1 p.m. in sub room 245.
Great. Jessica, thank you for offering that and then letting our listeners know about what Students for Reproductive Rights is and what you're up to. Now, and this question is open to everyone to jump in, but I want to talk about the role of men and how men can become allies on campus and also in a larger context.
Absolutely. I think that men are an important part of the picture when we're looking at feminism, because like, we always say that patriarchy hurts men just as much as it hurts women. It's not, when we talk about gender, we're not just talking about women, we're talking about men as well as women. And I think that feminist men are the best ever. There's some amazing groups on campus who, the allies most specifically, who are part of the resource groups, who do some really incredible work. I think that in order for men to be, quote, good feminists or to lend support to feminist movements, and the best thing to do is basically what anyone else who is wanting to get involved can do, constantly be self-aware, get informed, constantly, like, just be aware of what you're saying and how it impacts people, question yourselves and question your ideas and where they come from and how you can, and question your own privilege and how that makes you act in regards to other people. I think that everyone can and should be feminist, so.
Great. And we're going to go to Brad. He's going to plug an upcoming event once more. Brad?
Right. Well, I guess I can also speak to men becoming allies. I think it's right that equality is good for men as well as for women. I think that we're hurt when women aren't treated as equal. And also, I think that recognizing that, you know, there is this stereotype of the angry feminist, and I think that's part of the reason why so many women, when they're asked, are you a feminist, they say no. And so I think one of the most important things that men can do is actually to convince women that that feminism is, real feminism is in the interests of men as well as women, so that they don't fall for that stereotype of the angry feminist. So this conference, again, it's about the issue of childcare on campuses of higher institutions. I want to invite all students, faculty, well, anyone really who considers themselves involved or interested in that issue to contact me at childcare@ams.ubc.ca. And yeah, it should be it's really exciting. So get involved.
Great. Thank you, Brad, for bringing that perspective in as well, letting us know about that upcoming conference. So I also just want to give you all this opportunity to offer any additional comments or plug events that are coming up. Please.
Let me just shift over to this microphone. I would really encourage, I think Brad really said some great things about being open to, or Brad and Laup, about being open to learning about feminism, to learning about the history of feminism, to learning about to learning about different histories from what we're taught in high school or elementary school, because I think there's so much information there and so much exciting research that is being done, so many exciting projects that are being done, and so many initiatives that people are doing. Okay, I said that. That I think that there's just so much there and so much potential that if you were to take some time to just find out a little bit more about what people are doing, that there's you could become involved to the point where, like, you can become part of a movement. You become an ally. You become, I would just encourage everyone to, like, look into this as much as possible. Yeah. If I could just say something about just the Center for Women's and Gender Studies. The Center for Women's and Gender Studies is actually like a pretty, it's a smaller department, but it has a lot of affiliated centers. So there's the Center for Race, Autobiography, Gender, and Age, which is led by Dr. Sinara Tobani. As well, there is the Center for the Critical Studies in Sexuality program, which is a really fascinating discipline that I think people should look into as well. Did you want to say something, Jens?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to say that, you know, in regards to our differences and our similarities, I think that all the points which we come together far outweighs the points which we differ upon. And if you look at that in terms of oppressions, the different types of oppressions that we face, there are a lot of different oppressions that we all have. But, you know, feminism is so out there. It's always like the brunt of anything that people rant about. And it's only because it's so salient and it's so out there, because it's a point where a lot of us, like almost like all of us, can identify with. It's a point that we all come together upon, because feminism, it's sad to say, also like about gender, you know, female and male. So you are either female or male. So this is an action that can counter an oppression which most people can identify with. So feminism just seem really radical and stuff, because it's like the communication point which all the other oppressions can ride on. So that's why I think feminism is really, really important to be aware about and, you know, just embrace it. And I'm here to also push an event for March 19th. It's a Friday. From 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. in the sub concourse, there will be the Clothesline Project, which is being run. The volunteers from the Sexual Assault Support Center would be facilitating workshops to, like, do shirts and stuff. And you can basically write an anti-violence message on the shirt and it would be, like, displayed. So, yeah, come on down and make a shirt. Like, shirts and fabric paint would be provided.
Yeah. If I could just say one more thing, that the AMS Equity Program, this program is fairly new. It just started last year, but it's really important. It's a very important program that I think that it espouses a lot of the ideas that we're talking about right now about feminist and approaches to anti-oppression. So I would encourage people to also look into the AMS Equity Program, as well as the resource groups and the Center for Women's Gender Studies. Thanks.
And I want to thank you all for joining us live in studio. This was great to have this discussion and opportunity to hear about all the great work that's going on here on the UBC campus. And so, Elena, thank you. Lau, Jessica, Janice, and Brad, thank you all for being in studio with us. And we're going to take a break for some public service announcements, but stay with us. After the break, we're going to be bringing you an interview with Grassroots Women BC about the rally that's actually happening right now at Victory Square on this day for International Women's Day, March 8th. So stay with us. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM here in Vancouver.
The AMS Speakeasy provides information, peer counseling, and crisis support to the UBC community. Speakeasy volunteers are carefully chosen and trained to assist students in dealing with a wide range of issues, including relationship breakups, substance abuse, sexuality, and exam stress. To access our service for information or counseling, drop in to visit our desk on the north side of the sub concourse. All drop-ins and call-ins are strictly confidential. We also have an online email referral service. If we can't help you, we can refer you to someone who can.
CITR podcast update number 1.
Work has begun on Canada's information highway. That's the state-of-the-art network that we're told will change everything from the way we do business to the way we learn. Without getting too technical, tell me how what you're working on is different from what's available to me right now.
So right now, if you want to listen to your favorite CITR program, you need to be listening to it on your radio live or streaming over the internet live. But with CITR podcasts, you'll be able to download your favorite show and listen to it whenever you want on your computer or on your MP3 player.
I'm just thinking about that.
I know, it's pretty rad.
For more information, visit CITR.ca/podcast. Thank you for listening, and please be kind to robots.
Thanks to sky-high gas prices, we can convince America that more drilling is the answer. High gas prices? Drill more. Prices still high? Try drilling in a wildlife refuge or off a nice beach.
Our traditional energy resources are limited. Luckily, it's easy for students like you to conserve energy.
Woke up late for class? Buy some time in the morning by taking a shorter shower. Cut down by 1 minute every day and save enough to fund your daily caffeine fix for over a week. Plus, you save on electricity and water. Install a water-saving showerhead to save even more.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
I'm Walter Cronkite. I'd like you to hear something.
Any way you want it, that's the way you need it. Any way you want it.
They're radio hams, amateurs, giving of their own time and spending their own money.
CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Your volunteer-run station.
They're just two average guys who saw the need and volunteered.
And thanks for being with us. And Elena is back in studio to let us know about a conference that's coming up.
Oh, thank you for having me again. The Women's and Gender Studies Undergrad Association is going to be having an undergraduate conference, which is going to be held on Saturday, May 8th, 2010 at UBC. So the call for submissions is going out, has already been sent out. The deadline is April 2nd, 2010. Accepted submissions will be notified by April 11th. So just send a 100-word abstract of your submission to wagsconference@gmail.com. That's wagsconference@gmail.com by April 2nd, 2010.
Great. Thanks so much, Elena. Great. And that concludes our program. We're going to leave you with a clip of I spoke today with Hedy Alquinas, and she's with Grassroots Women BC, and there's a rally at Victory Square today. I spoke with her earlier about the organization and about the rally that was going on today, and we're going to close off the show because we're running out of time, but thank you for listening. This has been the program for March 8th, 2010. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Be sure to follow us on Twitter with the username CITRNews. You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to past shows at citr.ca. Brad Pepping produced this radio program. For more news, join us this Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Andrew Longhurst. From the entire news team here at CITR, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Career Fast Track right here on CITR 101.9 FM, and we're going to leave you with that clip from Grassroots Women BC. What is being planned for today?
Well, Grassroots Women is organizing our annual rally on International Women's Day. This is actually, I believe, the 13th year that we've done so. We've always used this opportunity as a way to really mark March 8th as the International Women's Day, as a day to really bring together progressive women, children and men in BC and in Vancouver to talk about what our issues are as working class women in BC and what the challenges we see around the world and how we can unite in solidarity with those struggles.
Great. And at the event at Victory Square starting at 5 o'clock, will there be speakers at the rally and event?
Yeah, we have several speakers lined up for the event representing different organizations. We have someone speaking from the Public Service Alliance of Canada, from the Philippine Women's Center, from the Pakistan Action Network, and from the Organizing Center for Social and Economic Justice, and also from the Coalition of Childcare Advocates of BC. And our rally will also be opened by a Coast Salish woman to just touch base about the issues of Indigenous women in BC.
Now, is there a theme to this year's event at Victory Square?
Yeah, the theme we took on this year is Capitalism in Crisis, Women in Action. And we wanted to take this theme this year because last year we didn't have a rally, but we had a forum that really talked about the economic crisis. If you remember a year ago, that was when, there was a lot of media attention around the current crisis. So this year, you know, we see that the effects of the crisis are still continuing and that women really need to come together to take action about it. Because from our perspective, we don't really believe some of the hoopla that even came out in the recent federal budget with, the finance minister talking about how, the crisis is coming to an end and that, everything is good. We just need to spend more money on stimulus spending that our lives are going to improve. But, even in the budget, the announcement that they made that they're adding a few dollars, a month or something to the universal child care benefit. The Harper government implemented that $100 a month child care benefit instead of putting forward a comprehensive national child care program. And that's just one of the issues, a major issue that Grassroots Women has been campaigning on for the last, 15 years now, to talk about really the lack of child care and as a symbol of women's inequality and how the system here really in Canada and BC is really being propped up by women's underpaid or unpaid labor.
Now, I want to talk about some of the stimulus funding over the past year or even a little more. There's been criticism, and especially by some faculty members here at UBC, that a lot of the stimulus funding disproportionately employs men because these are construction, quote unquote construction ready jobs, shovel ready, that largely in the construction sector is employing predominantly a male labor force. Mm-hmm. Is this an issue that you hope to address at this rally and on International Women's Day, these types of issues?
We'll be bringing that out in the rally today, but actually we've been dealing with, we've been talking about the crisis really that working class women and other working class people in Canada and also, the people of underdeveloped nations all over the world have been suffering for many years before, that it's not necessarily just because the developed world is under this crisis, but other people in other countries haven't been facing it for a long time. And here in BC, I think, for women and across Canada, for women, it's not, the conditions that we've been facing have been longer than just the past 2 years. So I think it's for us, we don't really see it as, under this crisis that it's going to be harder for men or harder for women. It's really going to affect everyone. And we know from, from different studies that in times of crisis or in times of economic need, it's often the women and the children who are the hardest hit because, women often, women make less economically than men. They make, I think it's an average of $7 to the dollar of every man. And then for also single-parent families, for single mothers who are working, a lot of them are living under poverty. That's why BC really has a, you know, BC has one of the highest child poverty rates. So,
were you disappointed that there were no announcements for daycare funding in the recent budget?
Oh yeah, definitely. We were. It's not that we were expecting it. I think that because we and other groups as well have been calling for a national child care program for so long, we weren't really expecting it to come out in this budget. But I think the fact that, I don't know, I just personally, listening to some of the speeches, it's kind of disheartening that the government often uses women in their speeches and in their announcements as a way to justify what they're doing, like by saying that they're, you know, placing more supports for Canadian families, even more supports for single-parent families by adding a few dollars and cents here and there. It's not really addressing some of the fundamental needs that women and children have. So, yeah, we weren't too happy about that.
And I want to ask you, why is it important that we have International Women's Day?
For us at Grassroots Women BC, we really look at not only what are the issues that women face here in BC and across Canada, but try to connect it to what are the struggles of women in other countries around the world, especially women that are struggling, you know, under similar conditions like in the U.S. and other developed countries, but also in underdeveloped countries as well. And we've had the opportunity to have a lot of sharing through different conferences we've had and through different exchanges with women that are struggling in different parts of the world, and we can really see from having that connection and from sharing those experiences that our issues and struggles are connected, that it's not that we're living in isolation in each of our countries, that we're all actually facing and fighting a larger system, and we name it really as the system of imperialism that's really created the conditions of exploitation and oppression that women and other classes are, other people are really facing around the world. So for us, it's really, we express genuine international solidarity, and we promote a people-to-people solidarity, not a solidarity that's based on charity, but a genuine type of solidarity where we support, you know, the women's struggles and the people's struggles in other nations for their genuine liberation and overall for all of our liberation and equality.
Right. And are there any other events coming up following this International Women's Day event today that you'd like to mention?
We don't have anything concrete that we can announce, but we are always having regular activities as part of Grassroots Women. So if anyone is interested, they can check out our website, which is www.grassrootswomen.ca, and we normally post announcements there. We are looking at some other kinds of forums and educational gatherings, and one of the topics we do want to look at is the impact of the economic crisis, and we're planning to do a forum or workshop around debtors' rights to talk about, like, what are the rights of people who are in debt and what kind of collective action can we take to kind of resist some of that systemic exploitation that's happening.
Well, thank you so much, Hetty.
Thank you.
And good luck with the event today.
Thank you.
And hopefully I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thanks.
Take care now.
Okay, you too.